Thursday, November 8th, 2018. It's 2 days after Election Day, LA podcast.
We awake in a world that, by all appearances, is the same as the one we went to sleep in on Tuesday night, but has actually fundamentally shifted in many ways. And I'm only being a little bit sarcastic. I do think there were some pretty big things that happened on Tuesday, even apart from like in California and local stuff.
I think that every election is, probably it really started to hit me with 2016, but every election is a good time to take stock of what kind of LA and what kind of California and United States you're waking up into, because things do change.
Yeah.
Fairly drastically, pretty quickly.
I spent so much time, it must have been a big election because I spent so much time fighting on Twitter about it that I didn't eat until 3 p.m.
Wow.
I was coursing with sort of alternating like righteous fury.
On election day or the day after election?
Today, which is Wednesday. We're recording this on Wednesday night. I was alternately mad and like ecstatic in a way that was physically taxing on me. Very
it's
unhealthy.
Hard.
I had to take a
it's
bath.
Wow. That is tough.
Where should we start? What do you got? What would you guys say is the biggest headline?
I mean, what I was saying was like big losses and big wins and not very many surprises, but a few surprises. So
okay.
Like the stuff that lost big lost pretty big. So
yes.
I think like a lot of people I was talking to today were shocked about specifically Prop 10.
Prop 10, how
badly it lost, and that there was no county in the state where it won except for San Francisco.
San Francisco. It did get pretty close in LA County. It got to, I think, like 48%. But overall, and we should say, they're still counting votes.
Yep.
Still probably in California, millions of votes left to be counted. So the margins will change a little bit. But pretty much everything is set in stone at this point.
It'll be interesting to see if that affects the margin much at all. But yeah, definitely would not be anywhere near close enough to change the overall result. I definitely think the headlines from Tuesday's election are Prop 10 losing in a landslide.
Yeah.
And
first call, I believe the first calls of the night were Newsom is governor. And Prop 10 loses, and you don't want to be
Feinstein
anywhere near John Cox in the announcements. Feinstein was early too, although that election is really close, which we'll talk about. A lot closer than anyone thought.
The other headline for me, at least, being Prop 6 going down in defeat.
Yes.
Also, the gas tax repeal.
Absolutely. Well, let's start with Prop 10. This did not. I mean, we had seen some polls indicating that it wasn't going to do great. It did do really, really poorly. And that means it is finger point in time. And I think this was all something that we wanted to pass. It's really important to get the rent stabilized all across the state. There's a huge affordability crisis. This was never a smart way to do it. And I think it is safe to say that now we're not undercutting the effort.
True.
Putting it on the state ballot created so many unnecessary hurdles. This is a proposition that applies to a sort of select number of places where housing is really unaffordable. And by putting it on the state ballot, it created a situation where now we have to go to Kern County and say, hey, excuse me, is it okay if we get rent control in these other places?
Yeah.
Oh, Shasta County, I know you want to secede from California. Before you go, would you mind giving LA and San Francisco and like expensive urban areas rent control?
And like all of you own your homes, but
yes,
help out poor struggling tenants in LA County.
I'd be curious to know what percent of the state, the state is something like 55-60% homeowner. Among voters, I'll bet that number in the
way
high 70s.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And any ballot measure that is perceived to benefit renters, to encourage the scourge of renters, is not going to do well among most homeowners. And you add in that the state is still like 40 something percent Republican. The state was never the easiest pathway to go down. And I think that's a referendum on the person who put it on the ballot, which is Michael Weinstein from the AIDS Healthcare Foundation. And I do want to point out something that we never talked about on the show. There were plenty of opportunities to get rent control passed in local municipalities around L.A. County. Mm-hmm. Glendale, Inglewood, Pasadena, and Long Beach all tried to gather signatures to get rent control on the ballot because they can do under Costa Hawkins. They could impose rent control for any building built prior to 1995, which in all those places is like almost every unit.
Any multifamily non-condo building.
Sorry, that's what I mean. Any apartment building.
Right.
But any apartment that's in those cities, pretty much, like the vast majority of them were built before 1995. It would be a pretty...
Oh, yeah.
Huge...
The rent stabilization ordinance that we have in Los Angeles... That is the interesting thing about Costa Hawkins is that if you already had a rent control citywide ordinance, then it reverted you back to, or it froze you at the point that you were at when Costa Hawkins was passed.
Yes.
If you were passing a new one from that point forward in the mid-90s, it made it so that you couldn't have it affect things after 1995. So Los Angeles is actually... much more restrictive than any of those new ordinances would be if passed in Long Beach or Inglewood, and still covers 75% of the apartments in the city of Los Angeles.
Yes, but those other places, there are opportunities to put a ton of apartments under rent control. These cities tried this year to get it on the ballot. It would have cost a pittance compared to what the AIDS Healthcare Foundation spent on this statewide ballot measure to get the signatures gathered for those cities. And AIDS Healthcare Foundation left them completely out to dry and didn't really involve a lot of other pro-tenants movements around the state who tried to help with this because it was seemingly some kind
of
ego project.
How much did they end up paying? Do we know?
I think it was in the 27 or so million.
Is that more than Measure S or?
Measure S was a ton for a city measure,
right.
but the state ones I think are just way more expensive.
And since we're talking money, it is worth pointing out that the Yes on 10 side was still massively outspent.
Yeah.
I was talking about like over like
but that,
all the ways of
yeah because yeah. They're the margin of failure for 10 was pretty comparable actually to Prop 8, which was also hugely outspent by dialysis companies. And that is a huge headline. A lot of people are protesting at Blackstone today. Yeah, their right to do it. I think their right to show that they're not going away. I also think that Blackstone and these other landlords overspent. I do not think the voting population of California needs a lot of provocation to knock down a renter-friendly ballot measure.
I disagree. So let's say for people listening that the reason why people are protesting at Blackstone today is Blackstone is the corporation that is the largest landlord in the city and county of LA now. I don't know about statewide, probably up there statewide as well. One of their primary tactics was after the financial crisis a decade ago, they started coming in and buying a lot of foreclosed single family homes. So Blackstone's interest in the Prop 10 fight is that Costa Hawkins makes it illegal to enact rent control that affects single family homes. Mm-hmm. So they were extremely vested in this fight in the sense that they own a lot of single family homes. They don't want those to be rent controlled. They want to be able to set rents for them at whatever they decide. And then, yes, so people are going out and protesting them. I disagree that from the perspective of these groups that they overspent. I think that, as we discussed when we had our crossover episode with Liam and Matt from the California Housing Crisis podcast, the urgency among realtors and apartment association and landlords, landlord corporations in this particular battle was that if they were to fail, then they would have just like an unlimited number of these fights going on across the state. I don't necessarily agree that that Californians are so ready to shut down rent control that they could take for granted that this was not going to fail, that this was going to fail.
I'm just saying in the benefit of hindsight that they did not need to spend as much money as they did for this measure to fail. I'm looking at something like Prop 3,
right,
which had a couple of newspapers go against it, but had some mainstream support the same way that Prop 10 did. And it still lost.
The second point, though, is that
no one was spending money against Prop 3. Really.
The second point, though, is that the margin is important. I think that the fact that this was not a close race, if it were a close race, there is still conceivably a really good reason for the landlord lobby, such as it is, to go to the table with legislators and say, rather than risk something like this coming back again in the near future, we would like to help negotiate a stripped down version of Costa-Hawkins on the legislative side of things. Now, I think they can really go back to their corner and say there's no reason for them to compromise. Or if they do decide to compromise, they do so from a very, very strong position.
Yeah, and I think you're right that the margin was important, that they really wanted to.
It's an investment that I think that will probably did pay off for them already.
That said, I still think there are pathways. Like, I don't think there's any reason not to bring up the same things that other municipalities tried to do this year, to keep trying. I think some goodwill was generated for the idea of rent control, and the fact that they won in San Francisco and got close in LA County. I think it is maybe time to go to the legislature and say, hey, you remember what you were going to do with keeping the bars open late in just a few select cities that were interested
or
in
like
this?
Congestion pricing. Same,
yes.
Our favorite state senator who does all these like kind of limited pilot tests, I guess, for ideas. But I think you could introduce something that said for these, you could look at the data and be like the most, you know, where the people are spending the most of their income on housing or something like that. We're going to try this in a few of these places. And then there would be stronger support for that, I guess.
Test it here, and we don't have to go to Reading and involve
knock on doors.
Yes, involve
and
them
say,
at all.
Hey, can you please help us?
Yeah. And people, you know, would say, like, well, there's a lot of low income people in Reading. That's true. But like you said, they are mostly homeowners, especially the voters. And it lost 80-20 there. So, I mean, the proof is kind of.
I like that you went county through county and picked out all these.
In the results. Oh, yeah. You better believe it.
I like seeing Hayes just like up until 4 o'clock in the morning go through every county.
Yes.
I mean, that is a great website. It is amazing to watch the returns come in, I gotta say.
Let's talk about Prop 6. We were all really worried about this. Did you think this was the gas tax repeal? It failed by about 10%, something like that.
Once I saw the first like round of reporting come in, I felt pretty good because it was already like 55 to 45 or something like that. So I felt like it was fine.
And that's kind of the secret of LA election or California elections is whatever the first reports come in at, it's going to move left for like the next like couple weeks, basically.
Yeah, I think that one was fine. I wasn't too worried about that one.
But before the election,
I don't know. The polling was always pretty solid that it was going to be okay.
I personally was very worried because
any pro-driver measure is scary.
And also because, as I've mentioned before on the podcast, there were problems that I had with the No on 6 campaign, which was extremely focused on this idea of like our infrastructure can't survive a no vote, which is true.
Probably true.
Which is probably true.
Yeah.
But my argument being that the urgency of a No on 6 vote as it pertains to climate change was completely lost in their messaging.
Well, I think the advocates did a good job picking up the slack around that, though. I mean, there was a pretty good Twitter chat, as they say, on Friday. And I do think a lot of the groups like NRDC and like Move LA were hitting that home. But yeah, I mean, I position it as a big like climate win. And especially when you look at what happened on a national scale, the fact that we have now a Democratic House.
Yeah.
We have a House, a Republican. I mean, we have, sorry, I'm really tired. We have a House of Representatives that believes in climate change now. So we have maybe some policies like the fuel efficiency rollback that was proposed, you know, by the EPA in the last few months leading up to this election. Maybe some of those things will be attacked more vigorously in on a national scale. So I was, maybe there could be a gas tax, you know, boost on a national scale proposed as well.
That's actually a good point too, that the takeover of the House in the federal setting is actually very important, specifically because the Republican House members, that was where they really let loose and were, I mean, they were the even further to the right conservatives than in the Senate, where you have like a lot of people who have just been there for 40 years and they kind of represent the Reaganite pro-business, low tax sort of thing. So that's important.
Yeah.
And the difference is House of Representatives, they don't believe in science.
Yeah, basically. So Prop 6 going, I think that SB 1, the state bill that Prop 6 was seeking to repeal.
The gas tax, yeah.
SB 1 was a major climate victory for the state of California. If Prop 6 had been successful, that would have been even as large or even larger of a defeat on the climate front as the initial passage of SB1.
I'm going to say larger because it would have prevented new gas taxes from being raised.
Exactly.
Right.
Yes.
Yeah. Nobody talked about that part of it too,
brutal.
Which was, and then there was, you looked at other, and just to like zoom out, like Missouri said no to a gas tax. You look at like these other states that they, you know, this is kind of modeled after something that we have tried to do, and Missouri said no. And then in Washington state, they had a carbon tax proposed, which is something I could see California possibly doing in the next few years, but it also failed because the oil and gas companies really just
this is an interesting thing. I mean, that is true
one,
for Washington.
One factor,
yes. But I read this book about Exxon, and they like carbon taxes specifically because they're not gas taxes,
right?
And because it would kneecap the coal industry. It would sort of they can afford the hit
they
from a
can.
Carbon tax.
Yeah.
That
other there are many other reasons why it failed. This
can't.
Is the second time that the carbon tax has failed in Washington state, but something else to just look for in, you know, something that we as a climate leader,
but
supposedly.
We didn't do we didn't do those things at the ballot box. So that's where Prop 6 was so dangerous, because it said that if you wanted to in the future raise taxes on gas specifically, the only way you could do that would be to go through a popular referendum, which
some states require. You have to do that. And we're lucky that we don't actually have to.
We're lucky
do
that we don't.
But
it basically means that it will never happen.
Wouldn't it have been a two thirds? It would have had to be a two thirds majority to pass, right?
To raise a
to raise a tax. Oh my God, that would have been so brutal. But I don't. I mean, I agree with you. We can't lose sight of the fact that in California,
I don't actually, now that I'm thinking about it, I don't know if that's true for state new taxes or only for,
I think it's for
municipal and county. Not positive.
Well,
it's definitely for
yeah,
city
it could
and
be
county.
Local because, for example, W
had to pass by two-thirds.
A county measure had to pass by two-thirds,
which
is
it did.
Barely, but now it's gaining. And then something we never talked about on the show, but I was kind of shocked that it passed, was in Santa Monica, Measure SM.
What
so remember, like Santa Monica tried to pass LV way back, and it was basically saying no more mega developments, no more large developments. It was they think that
mega
large
development
developments
being
are
defined as like a three-story building.
It's probably like three. We can have a different segment that's a recurring segment just about the problems of Santa Monica and come up with a name for that, because they have their own like comical development issues. But this would require a supermajority approval on these kind of mega developments from their own city council. So it used to be like, if the city council voted on things like a density bonus or whatever Santa Monica has, They would just need to have like, you know, a 50% of the council members approve it. Now it requires 2/3. It also required a 2/3 majority to pass this thing.
Wow.
So they,
how many
now,
aren't there only like 7 of them?
There's only like, I mean, yeah. And it was funny because like it was like they had to put this on the ballot even. And it was like, not even everybody agreed it should be on the ballot.
Oh my,
it's just,
God.
So now they have you. So in order to get something like bigger than normal, it won't just be 50. It has to be 2/3, which was kind of, I didn't think, I thought maybe that Santa Monica had learned from their development woes and like they would start to see. They're so progressive on so many fronts.
They love it.
They know that they do not want to build any taller buildings.
Their city hasn't grown since 1965, and they love it that way.
But more parking spaces and, you know, shorter buildings will definitely solve the problem.
Over the city. Yeah, so that passed.
Yeah, so that one passed.
That was not even on my radar.
Yeah, I mean, I didn't really look at it in much until today, but it was, it's just shocking sometimes.
That is a bummer. But yeah. I was just saying that, you know, the fact that in California, we, in campaigning in favor of a gas tax, were not allowed to mention climate change. And in the talking points packet that I saw, that the No on Six campaign said, don't get caught in the trap of defending gas taxes.
Yeah.
That they passed.
Yep.
Is very depressing.
All I can say is that our climate change efforts as a state are dependent on the legislature having the authority to enact measures like this. And oftentimes the things that the legislature does are not tied enough to like the actual results that they will produce for my liking.
They're the inverse of them in the case of like, well, we're going to fix the road so you could drive more and faster.
Yeah. The really crucial element is that climate change is something that voters react to when it's presented to them in such a way that it is clear what the stakes are. And in the case of the gas tax repeal, what I was worried about was that people see that as being something that affects them personally and not the broader picture. So bravo, Californians. You saw through
our demise.
Tricks.
Yeah, that's good. And they were really outspent. The Yes on Six campaign basically ran out of money at some point. The unions really, really got behind.
Well, yeah. And also, this, like, especially in L.A., LA did a good job, and like Metro and the mayor's office, of just highlighting what projects were being funded by this. It just within a year. I mean, it had only been a year since we had
groundbreaking after groundbreaking.
Yeah. Everything they were just like, and guess what? Another brought to you by SB1.
That's right. The giant scissors factory ran out of giant scissors.
But I think that was a really smart thing. And if to align that with maybe the climate benefits over the next year would be a good way to keep showing the benefits of what we're doing here.
Yes. But that was the one state proposition that Mayor Garcetti really got behind. I do want to say, just as a resource for people, if anyone is looking for a great voter guide to consult after the election has already happened, Mayor Garcetti is going through all the state propositions tonight and saying whether or not people voted correctly on
them.
Where
on his
happening?
Twitter feed?
Are you kidding me?
He's saying Prop 1. This is great. This will fund veteran and affordable housing.
Only the ones
this
that
was
won?
The right way to vote.
Only the ones that won though, or both ways.
Just the ones that he likes. Didn't say anything about Prop 5 that lost. Like, he said it was good. Prop 6 lost, but the stuff that I searched his feed, never saw him. I never saw tweet one about these. Maybe he was out giving talks about them.
He was raising money for the Democratic victories in the House, so you should thank him, actually.
Well, look,
that Jimmy Kimmel party,
it worked. But he did really
don't expect that Hayes will not go through and figure out whether or not the people Garcetti funded actually won. He will.
Let's talk about Alex Villanueva. Man,
what's the latest? Because
the last I saw, he's up by about 5,000. I'm
trending towards him.
Yeah, it's moving towards him because you know, the Democrats sent mail in their ballots late, and his margin has continued to grow.
Yep.
I have to say that his current margin is less than the number of unique visitors that our voter guide received, where we did endorse him.
So you think that it's because of
after
us.
A lot of debate. So I'll say if this goes badly, it is on us, and I think it absolutely could and probably will. I did see something, Scott, you highlighted something in, I think, Maya Lau's article about it today, which, by the way, congratulations, Maya Lau, because this has a huge amount to do with you. The LA Times reporter who has really documented a lot of the crazy stuff going on in the sheriff's department this year. In her article, she talked about how Villanueva promised to get ICE out of the jails, but then mentioned that he also said he was going to march inmates out of the jails
into ICE custody.
Into ICE custody. Now, I did not hear that side of it. I promise it would have come up in our debate if he had said that. I'm guessing that CHRLA, the Coalition for Humane Immigration Rights of Los Angeles, also wasn't aware of that when they endorsed him and did a huge amount of campaigning.
And what did McDonald say? He was like, I will work with ICE, right? Like his
he said they would work with ICE or what ICE, they're like, not here, you know, don't look behind this door,
right? So there's all
McDonald's
these different
defense was that the kind of what you would expect a law enforcement officer to say, like, yes, we do work with ICE, but only in situations where it is called for, blah blah blah. He had a bunch of statistics.
The city provides a certain number of regulations in terms of how
that's a really good impersonation.
No, he actually
that's
has like a Boston accent.
Which I'm sure you could do, but that's fine. So Villanueva, this is the first time in 100 years that a sitting sheriff has been beaten by a challenger.
Yeah, because back then they would just shoot the guy.
and then
whoever's
the
wearing the badge.
And now, I mean, even now, you're the sheriff until you die or until you get hauled off to a federal courtroom where you say that you have Alzheimer's and therefore you can't go to prison. One or the other.
But it's really shocking. A lot of people chalking the victory up today. I think the Democrat endorsement is obviously huge. Latino last name, people seem to think made a big difference. I think it is always safe to consider like the dumbest reason.
Villanueva, a Democrat, and McDonnell, a former
Republican, but it's a nonpartisan race, so no one was going with that on the ballot. But a lot of people bring in the county Democrats' endorsement,
right?
But I, you know, it's such a huge hill to overcome incumbency. That I still think people just knew kind of what was going on in this race more than they usually do.
Yeah, I wonder too. I feel like the ICE thing was probably the deciding factor. If it turns out that we're trading an in jail ICE presence for an immediately outside of jail ICE presence, that's unfortunate, but I think that probably factored pretty heavily into people's votes.
Sure.
And then of course the existing scandal. There are a lot of reasons to not vote for the incumbent. There are a lot of scandals.
Absolutely.
And there is the broader context of federal immigration enforcement. Yeah. And I can see why people would want something different in, in the jail system.
But I think incumbency was less of an advantage, I guess, across the entire country. So now when people look at the person that has a job already, I guess they're just generally less inclined to let them keep it, which is not a bad thing.
No.
Let's talk about Kevin De Leon for a second, a local politician with state aspirations. He got a lot closer than he was polled to get. Mm-hmm. I mean, last I checked, it was something like 46-54 or something like that against Dianne Feinstein. He's not going to win, but it was pretty tight race. I think a ton of Republicans voted for him because they just hate Dianne Feinstein. that, I think, is relevant in today's news with something that we have to talk about. We're going to take a circuitous route back to Kevin De Leon, but council, LA council member Jose Huizar got his office and home raided by the FBI.
Really
today.
Great pictures of the FBI officers just taking the special agents just having boxes that they were removing from his home. That
yes, was, they brought in a dog.
And a really cute home, don't you think?
Yeah, nice house.
Really, yeah.
I think helicopters might have been brought in.
Didn't even
dogs. There were dogs.
There was a thumb drive dog. There was a dog that.
Wait, what? How'd you know?
I read somewhere that it is trained to find storage devices.
What?
That's
what
incredible.
What are they smelling for?
I don't
Silicon?
Know.
Silicon?
Yeah, I guess so.
That is what? Really cool.
Isn't that wild?
Yeah.
So it is unclear exactly what it's about. I don't know if it's involving some of the stuff that he has been under fire for recently. It does sort of feel like, so his wife announced that she was running to replace him in 2020 about a month ago, maybe like a month and a week ago.
Yeah.
And since then he has gotten three separate accusations of discrimination in his office, forcing aides to work on his wife's campaign, forcing them to pick up dog poop, and prioritizing, like giving preferential treatment to aides that he was allegedly having an affair with. Stuff, yep. It just keeps piling up.
Yeah, and actually it's kind of amazing because Huizar was not really in the news much at all recently, I feel like, and it has just been...
He took a long break.
Torrential for the past, like you said, since he announced that he was going to be supporting his wife in her bid to take over his seat. And wow, like, as I said to you and Alyssa earlier today, at this point, even accepting the fact that he has been accused of heinous sexual conduct in the office, it does seem like just the political stuff alone would be enough to, end his tenure in City Hall.
But some of these articles said that he was being investigated by the FBI starting 7 years ago.
Whoa.
For campaign stuff, and like they were asking about his financial information and stuff like that, deals that he had made.
I was going to say the FBI aren't getting involved for like the dog poop thing, right? That was my first thought. I was
thinking
it was an undercover officer that was an aide, and he made the aide pick up dog poop without a bag.
That's really why the dog was there. Only a dog would know that.
That was the dog.
Only the dog.
It was the thumb drive
dipping
dog. The
dogs communicate to the other dogs.
I've watched both The Wire and The Americans, and I'm sure that there's some other reason that the FBI would be interested in this beyond just like misallocation of campaign resources.
Yeah, and the fact that they're like kicking in his door, the door is unlocked, but like that implies that this has reached another level. And so I think it is time to think about pulling a Mitch Englander and maybe stepping aside. And so that brings me to my original point. I think there's a pretty good chance, and I've heard people say this, that De Leon might run for that seat.
Yeah.
I think he wants to be mayor of LA eventually.
I want him to be mayor of LA.
Yeah, sure. he would coast into...
Is he from here? Did we talk about this before?
Yes.
Yes.
He lives in that district?
I don't know if he lives in that district.
Okay. What? He was 20... Yeah, I mean, he was... Senate District 25 is downtown. Yeah, basically.
All right. Oh,
right.
Didn't we talk about this? I feel like we did.
I think it was off. We were talking about Wendy Correa. We were talking about Wendy Correa.
Santiago.
Oh, that's what we're talking about.
And Santiago.
Yeah.
All
well,
of
that's
home.
Interesting. I mean, that's a really... Do you think that he planted the thumb drives in...
That's one of
the... That's what Huizar thinks.
Huizar's listening. He's like, oh, okay, that's a good...
He did say...
Let's go with like, that.
He did
going
already
down tonight, but
say
I'll be
it
back.
Was a coordinated attack against him by political operatives. So that is kind of what he was implying.
I mean, I'm just glad they waited until the day after the election, because that's a lot of news to cover for our local news teams it was
too much.
The day before.
So this is just to say, like, I think he...
we are starting the rumor mill spinning right now. Yep, we really are. But honestly, the thing with Huizar and his wife is a bizarre. It just seems like it seems like if that really is your goal to get your campaign staff or your office staff to work on the campaign for your wife illicitly, that's a really bad plan to do in a very public way.
Yeah.
But
I also think that is not something the FBI would do a public raid for. I mean, it's got to be more than that.
You would think so, right? Because that seems like the kind of garden variety thing that happens at City Hall all the time. But yeah, we'll see, I guess.
But it could be some kind of campaign stuff. Who knows? The public bank charter amendment B failed. The margin looks like it's going to be something like 55.
Yeah.
That was one that I was pretty hopeful about because it was LA City. You can pass some more like progressive stuff.
Yeah. I don't know. I feel like whoever wrote that op-ed in the LA Times.
Yeah, I think they sunk it.
Like really did a lot of damage to that because so many other places were endorsing it, and what did we have to lose? Nothing. Yeah, nothing.
And then we find out like 2 days before the election that Wells Fargo accidentally foreclosed on hundreds more people than they were supposed to. This bank that was managing our money for years. I mean, it would seem to be a great endorsement for giving another financial institution a try.
I hope they rewrite it to the LA Times preference and then, you know, resubmit it because it seems like a great idea and we would be a good test market for that.
I am going to disagree on that as well. I think that, yes, the LA Times endorsement was definitely damaging, and I think that they were excessively pessimistic in their forecasting for how things would go if LA had its own public bank. But what was really striking to me and what really was on my mind the day after the election was the total absence of any kind of political leadership on Charter Amendment B by any of the city council who voted to put it on the ballot.
And who said they were going to really champion it. I think they did have...
Wesson did. I feel like it was his thing, right?
But think that support...
And in what way?
That support dried up a little bit.
It definitely did. Yeah. To the extent that I was seeing a lot of coverage of Charter Amendment B that referred to it as a grassroots push by Public Bank LA, which it was not. It was something that was like, yes, they actually did end up championing it, but
it wasn't their fight to put it on the ballot.
Exactly.
Wesson got it on there.
So my question really is, if city council thinks and or thought that this was a good idea, I actually end up almost agreeing with the LA Times op-ed in the sense that it should have been somewhat more incumbent upon them and they should have been somewhat more forthcoming in telling voters what their reason was for thinking this was a good idea. Now, I started off from a place of thinking a public bank is a great idea. It's a progressive idea. It's something that I want to see the city try, but I can definitely understand where a voter who was not predisposed to feel that way would see the language of the amendment, the arguments around it, and basically say, there's nothing here.
Yeah.
None of these people have made a case for why this is a good idea.
The mayor doesn't have an opinion on this. This is a giant
undertaking. There was nothing there. So that's true.
I feel like city council and the mayor, if this was actually something that they wanted to pass, they sure as hell didn't act like it.
Yeah. No, I think that is, or at the very least, any efforts they made sort of faded over time, in the case of Wesson especially. The biggest face audit the last few weeks was Kevin De Leon. He actually did have a little rally for the public bank.
Wow. And that's gonna be his first.
That's right. He's
point
building
of business.
up. Yes, he's building up local support. But yeah, I mean, I think everyone who worked on it, they did a pretty admirable job on a shoestring.
Yeah.
They got like as much information out there as they could, because I can name pretty much personally everyone who was really involved in that campaign. Mm-hmm. And they came pretty close.
I do think that it's worth noting that because of the path that this would have to take in order to become a reality, which is that the public would have to approve it, the city council would have to approve it, and the state would have to approve it. This doesn't necessarily, I think this is why it's important to note that city council kind of abandoned their support of it. It doesn't necessarily have to go in the order of public, city,
right.
State.
Good point.
The city council could come back with a more detailed proposal of what they actually want to see happen here. But I think at this point in time, it does not seem like the investment is there on their part.
No, but the state could open up
right.
options. Like, yeah, there
the state could.
Lots
that
of other
is,
stuff.
That's probably more
lots of other
likely
stuff
at this point.
Could happen. Prop 5 failed. That rules. that also went down something like 55-45. But again, always touch and go when it comes to handouts for homeowners in California. And it was great in our opinion that this didn't pass. Scott, I saw you going back and forth in my Menchie's today. you don't like that, Elizabeth? About that this is the era that... This is the beginning of curtailing
Prop 13.
Prop 13.
Right.
I actually think that if you look at statewide results, Prop 5 losing is probably the biggest victory for the progressive left in all of California. And I don't think it seems like that at first.
Well, part of that is because people didn't really
there was no
get
mobilization
up for,
yeah. for this.
And I think more people should have. And if it had passed, I would be very pissed.
There was no real mobilization. This was not the focus of a grassroots effort in the way that Yes on 10 was. But I think that what we should take away from Prop 5 losing is that we are now, it's 2018, Prop 13 passed in 1978. It's 40 years that we have just gone through and gradually expanded and made these tax breaks for homeowners larger and larger, made the burden on local cities that want to find ways to recoup lost finances from those tax breaks.
And the tax burden,
more
the tax break is so large, I gotta say, that that the reason Prop 5 came about is because they think the tax break is itself a burden that keeps them from moving.
Right.
Because
yeah.
it's too gigantic and they can never leave their homes.
Right. So this ballot measure, again, was put forward by the California Association of Realtors. They want to stimulate housing sales of houses. And old people are not moving because they have these benefits that are very good and they would lose out on them if they moved anywhere else. So the goal of Prop 5 was expand Prop 13. I think, Liam and Matt at the California Housing Crisis podcast described it really well in saying that it was basically looking at the solution to Prop 13 as being more Prop 13. So this ends up being, despite the lack of progressive mobilization, I think the biggest result of the night for the progressive left in California, because this is the first time really that we've seen an expansion, a major expansion of Prop 13 fail.
Mm-hmm.
And it wasn't even particularly close. This was also another one that was down 10 points or so as of the time of this recording. So what that says to me is that we have, I really think that we've passed a threshold with Prop 13. We've passed a point at which there is no longer a broad enough base that is benefiting from Prop 13 to sustain it. And I think that from that point that we really will start to snowball. Like, the base is only going to get smaller from here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And they did it to themselves.
And they did it.
They made homes so unaffordable that yeah. there's no constituents here.
Yeah. Yeah. And so I think that we are definitely not in, as I said on Twitter, I was saying the era of curtailing Prop 13 should begin. It has not begun yet. We have not chipped away at Prop 13. And there's definitely good cause to look at Tuesday's results and say, there's no sign that that is about to happen. But as we discussed a bit earlier, the 2020 ballot will see a split roll, a removal of commercial property from the protections of Prop 13, as well as a possible retry of Prop 5 that would include reducing inheritance benefits in Prop 13.
A compromise.
Right.
Yeah, so yeah. Do we like
that's
that?
That's new.
I mean, the split roll is good.
At this point, I'm not voting for anything the California Association of Realtors puts forward.
I mean, that getting rid of the inheritance benefits is huge. That's like a pillar of Prop 13.
Yeah,
Liam Dillon really exposed it earlier this year.
Second homes,
yes.
Are they going to call it the Jeff Bridges
yes.
rule?
God, if they could get him to come out and apologize and say, I'm ready to give up the tax right. break that I apparently didn't
I'm
even know I
to,
had
yeah,
on the second
to.
Home. Yeah, it feels like 2020 is going to be a showdown.
He actually came out and said, I pay a lot of other taxes.
Oh, yeah, that's right. It makes me, I'm already frustrated in anticipation that 2020 is going to be such a consequential year for Prop 13 in California, and it is going to be hard to make space for it in the news.
Oh, yeah. Definitely.
So, I mean, that I could see that.
Among other things, you mean?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I could see that being a problem.
Yeah. So it will be interesting to see where activists seeking to increase social services and anything like that, in my mind, requires some major cuts at Prop 13. I think we're going to see more and more of those get proposed.
Yep.
So Prop 5 going down is, in my opinion, a signifier of a big change in California.
Jarvis.
Spinning in his grave. Like the animals are allowed to spin around in their cages now. It brought 12 past. Thank you.
Prop 12.
Anything else? Any other big things from California local
election? Are we allowed to talk about some of the flipping of the congressional districts?
Yeah, we're allowed to. Yes.
Hayes, you went and canvassed.
Yes, in Palmdale. Yeah. And I would say I'm responsible for 6,000 votes, like that. Mm-hmm. I don't know exactly what the margin is.
You canvassed for Katie Hill and I canvassed for Prop 10. So we've got
the scorecard.
The Davenport bump and the Fraser kiss of death.
I also spent a day at Newport Beach for Harley Ruda, but we're not allowed to talk about that at all.
But
I don't even know if you're allowed to go down there.
Yeah,
I'm not sure.
I think so.
But those two races, I will say, super close.
Yep.
And did the conceding happen today for both of those, or was that yesterday?
Has Rohrabacher conceded?
I don't know if he is.
I believe
even,
he did.
Oh,
did
okay.
He?
Steve okay. Knight definitely conceded today.
By voicemail. That was amazing. Right. But I feel like, it was like these men just really just weren't going to let it go. And they're just like, okay, I'll wait till tomorrow.
Yeah, but then the lead just...
I believe.
But what about... But the Katie Hill thing, so like... I mean, did you expect that? Did you think, especially after talking to the people in Palmdale?
I expected that.
In Palmdale, yes. Palmdale seems to be a leftier part of that district. Yeah. I think it's like Santa Clarita that's a lot more conservative.
And Lancaster is surprisingly conservative.
Palmdale, interesting. It's pretty all single family homes. that I
So if you talk to 6,000 people, that's a lot of walking between home
and
to
some
home.
Of them, so at the beginning, you know, they give you like a packet of houses to go to. And the first four that I went to with my father-in-law, we had to drive between them.
Right.
Wow.
And I thought, this is going to be a very long day. But then eventually you end up on a street that you can actually walk down and get like whatever, 10 homes. But yeah, it. But I think people were generally amenable to her. The healthcare stuff is very persuasive.
Yep.
She was a great candidate. The fact that she ran PATH so young is like a great resume builder.
Sure.
I think she did a great job not selling out on the gas tax. Not that we're allowed to talk about Orange County, but the fact that Katie Porter, otherwise a great progressive, she did endorse repealing the gas tax.
Right.
Yeah.
And she lost, we should mention.
And she lost.
Yeah.
And I think that's a lesson for pretty much any Democrat in the country. No Republican is ever going to vote for you.
Yeah.
It doesn't. There's this imaginary block of centrist Republicans who don't like Trump and are just looking for any opportunity to vote for a Democrat. It is never going to happen.
Unless you lose
potential volunteers.
Unless you're running against Dianne Feinstein.
Oh, yeah.
Otherwise, just forget about it.
You might.
Gil Cisneros is going to lose.
That's surprising to me, too.
Not really. I don't think so. He was one of the crappier candidates nationally, I would say. He had no ideology to speak of, was a Republican like 2 seconds ago, won the lottery, and now suddenly is qualified to lead this district. I don't know. Were there any other ones that touch L.A. County? That were
surprising,
divisive at all. Omar Navarro.
Margin there?
Maxine Waters. Margin was. It's about to clear 50. I'm pretty sure. His margin was 7 points worse than Asia Brown's, who was running in the adjacent district, the mayor of Compton.
Yep. Yep.
And she. Dropped out of that race 2 months before the primary.
Yep. That says it all. Also, what, 25% of people in that district should be very ashamed of themselves.
Yeah, I mean,
voting for Omar Navarro.
I have to believe they didn't know exactly what they were doing, but who knows? Okay, that's the fallout. What an election season. We did it.
I mean,
We made it.
Wow.
I mean, can we talk quickly about the governor? Because I don't think we really even touched upon. I mean,
easy to forget.
I think, well, unless you read, well, if you read the New Yorker profile, you might just think it was.
Oh, yeah. What did the New Yorker have to say about Gavin Newsom?
It just made him seem like not a very, like a super superficial person. I mean, okay. I
that seems fair.
The eye test. All right.
I don't know. I was actually more
drawn to their comments about Garcetti.
Oh, well, that was really funny.
What did
too
it say?
It was like he hasn't wowed the crowd by break dancing or something.
Here's what it was.
I did see this.
Gavin Newsom doesn't have the God-given talents of an Eric Garcetti who wowed voters with his by being a breakdancing Rhodes Scholar.
Yes.
Yeah.
That is one of my favorite sentences ever written.
I didn't really know that he that he breakdanced.
I actually pulled up a video of him doing it, and it is not... I think you would more likely call it like doing the robot, basically. It does not really look like an approximation of breakdancing.
But I think that's
the Newsom profile was more that he is just like this very wealthy, slightly out of touch, maybe person who, I don't know. He's not Jerry Brown is what who is a very different person.
Well,
so.
Yeah, I mean, but I think he, if he's so superficial, I think the positive potentially for him is that he does want, he's a people pleaser. He jumped onto Medicare for All.
Yeah.
When, like, you know, he likes those, like, rousing moments where everyone is like, wow, Gavin. Whereas Jerry Brown.
Who doesn't?
Jerry Brown got off on upsetting people. Like,
yeah,
he really did.
Like, and you know, that was the most frustrating thing about his administration was that he loved withholding.
Administrations.
Yes. He, yeah. Well, I mean, at least the later ones. He really was a tightwad.
Yeah. I think that almost irrespective of what kind of a governor Gavin Newsom ends up being, we have some good things to look forward to in the form of things that Jerry Brown vetoed that will not yep. get vetoed by yep. Newsom.
Mm-hmm. Like party bills.
Party law.
Most staying up late.
Most prominently things
the
like
bars.
The bill that was passed in the legislature to make female sanitary items like tampons non-taxable that Jerry Brown inexplicably vetoed.
God.
Things like that where you're just like, okay,
the real yes. party bill is what I call that. Because if it's cheaper, you're just
one after another.
You're just, your life is opening up to new possibilities.
That they one thing I did see was looks like they have a supermajority in the Senate and Assembly
in both
the Democrats or at least
I haven't
yeah it's got to shake out but yeah. they're gonna have good numbers and I already saw today they're talking about universal pre-K.
Yep, and that was a big thing for Newsom on the campaign trail.
Yep.
So
that
I think
would be huge.
Yeah.
No, nothing that, short of huge.
Yeah, that should be the real thing and that we are pushing for is among the major multiple affordability crises
yes.
we have. I mean, that could be a real change for working parents and mm-hmm. Allowing people to have a little bit more flexibility with their finances when they're young parents, which is a huge problem with almost everyone I know who is a parent. So that's the kind of thing.
Honestly, the state of California will look very different in January with a new governor, a legislature that has been consistently far to the left of the governor and ready and just like really chomping at the bit to pass major expansions to the social safety net in California. And most likely a governor who will be much more accommodating of that type of progressive vision. It's going to be interesting to see where they go, personally.
Yeah.
You're pumped. You're excited.
There are almost, this is the thing, is that it's kind of like Hayes getting on Twitter the day after election day. It's just like, before we had Jerry Brown and he was the only check really to whatever the legislature wanted
right.
to do. And you're kind of like, man, that's a buzzkill, but also maybe it's keeping us safe. I don't know. Now it's like, well, there's really nothing.
Yeah.
There's no barrier there. It's
pass anything you want, guys.
Yeah.
It's alternately just thrilling and kind of scary, but we'll see what happens.
He also made promises on housing production that basically mean they were so huge. Day one in office, he has to build like 1,000 homes. Like, it's going to be almost impossible to meet the goals that he set.
Yeah.
I want like a leaderboard like on the Capitol with just like mm-hmm. housing units produced. And on the other side, cars crushed.
Let's see if we can get that for you.
It's interesting. I mean, now the clock really starts ticking on Garcetti announcing his presidential campaign if he ever is going to. I'm surprised he didn't do it to the reporters assembled around Jose Huizar's office earlier today. A little impromptu press conference. But yeah, now we wait to see what happens there. We'll be back on Monday. Thank you for listening to this special episode of LA Podcast. Bye.